In 3, 2, 1. Okay, so today joining me on the podcast is none other than Amber and Hannah. Ladies, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to do this. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, awesome. Now, the reason why I actually wanted to get you two on today was because of the fact that you guys are so committed to social media and the importance of making sure it's contributing to your business, but not that, but also like mental health, which also stuff we can cover on today in the podcast. Now, first off, just right off the bat, I want to talk about your business Social Friends. So let's start with letting the audience know, what is it and how did you come to this part?
Yeah, sure. So we're social media marketing. So we help businesses build and grow their business through social, basically. So we can train them or we can manage social media for them, basically. So I guess it all started because of probably my passion for small business and growing and developing leaders and businesses. And Hannah came into it because she was actually doing the marketing for my husband, our concrete business. We just noticed that there was a gap. Like a lot of small business owners were really, it's an area that they really struggle in, is social media marketing. So yeah, we just found it was a way that we could support other businesses through something that we find really fun.
Good. So that just brings me to the next part, because for me, social, we're living in a world where like social media is vastly growing. Now there's more users than ever, but there's also now more criticism than ever. Let's start by just saying on the social media for the business side of things, how important do you believe social media is when it comes to running a business?
Super important. I mean, obviously we're going to say that, right? Because that's what we do. But if you think about it, it's really just as simple as businesses need revenue to survive. Revenue comes from sales. Sales come from marketing. And marketing, you need to market your business where people are spending time, where people are going to see you. So that can be a number of different places, but we know how much time people are spending online these days. So that's why it's so important. People's attention are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all those social platforms. So if you want people to see you several times, then they're the place that you need to be on. That's why it's so important.
Okay. So in terms of social media, it obviously gets you revenue, it gets you clients, it gets you leads, and it also generates traffic for you. What is the best way to, would you say, it's a bit of a broad question, but what do you believe is one of the best ways to at least generate traffic for your business?
So there's lots of different ways. So I'll give you, probably start with a broad answer, I guess, and then if you want some more detail on something specific, we can let you know. So we always start with a plan. Everything starts with planning for us. We're mad about planning. So the first thing you want to do is have a really solid strategy. So you want to make sure, like, take it from your business vision, so your purpose, your mission, and your values of the business, basically. So you need to have that set, because your business purpose and your mission is going to be where your goals are created from your business. And if your marketing doesn't align with your business goals, then what are you actually marketing for? And then the other thing where your vision comes in is being clear on your values. You want to express your values through what you're putting out on social media, because like attracts like, right? So you want people, if you want to attract your ideal clients that align with your business values into your business, then that's what you need to be putting out there. So you've got to start with your vision. You've got to be really clear on who your ideal clients are. Create ideal client avatars. We like to give them a name. Make it a little bit more human and a bit more personal. The second thing that you really want to do is knowing and understanding who your ideal clients are, but knowing what their problems are. People express that you understand that on social media, and people are going to feel confident that you can actually solve the problem that they have. You want to create content that your ideal clients want to see as well. Can you remember how much percentage is it with video content, which are 1,200. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're putting out video content, that's going to, video content gets 1,200% more shares than text and images combined.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, that's quite interesting. That's quite interesting because I remember when we started this podcast, normally it was just trying to put up as much content for the sake of putting it out there. So it wasn't really like we had like that sort of idea, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. It's like, okay, here's what we do, here's what we can make and put it out there. But what do you believe about video content that people want to see more than just, you know, text?
I think it's a combination of things. So for a start, the algorithm favors video because that's just what the platforms are designed to do currently. The other thing is that we've kind of trained ourselves to love video. I mean, you think like way back to like Australia's Funniest Home Videos or whatever, right? We've always loved engaging in that sort of thing and seeing who people are and all of that. Then reality TV got bigger. And then these social platforms that became very visual and video based. And look at TikTok. TikTok is like the fastest growing platform at the moment, right? And it's all short videos.
Yeah.
So we like them.
Yeah. TikTok, I remember we had a conversation about this and I tried to start TikTok, but it's just when you actually open up the app and then you see people posting stuff like constantly, like it's very hard to compete about people with against people who are just doing 6 second dance videos really, and then it's a whole different ball game. I honestly believe that TikTok now is a skill on its own. And yeah, but it's insane that some people can just get famous off that sort of stuff. Like, so it obviously it's a tool. So one that I'm still trying to learn the slopes of. But it's the issue I hear these days with people who are on social media trying to grow their business is that now we've got so many platforms. You know, it started off with we got LinkedIn, we got Facebook, we got Twitter, we got Instagram, we've got TikTok, and now we have Snapchat. Like, if someone was coming to you and they were saying, okay, how can I work with social media marketing? How would you rank each social media platform from, say, most important to least important?
So I would start with what we were just talking about, and starting with your ideal client avatars, because if you can understand who they are and where they're spending time online, then that's going to give you a better idea of your platform to perform better for you. So there's so many stats and so much information on this. So you can tell by the demographic of your avatar which platform they're spending more time on because you support it. So it will depend, that question will depend on who your clients are. But if you've got a client that spends predominantly most of their time on Facebook, then you need to start with Facebook. But if they're a client that spends a lot of their time on TikTok, then you're going to have to get a really good strategy in place and you can learn that really fast. It's also important to have a really good strategy around not just all the organic stuff, but paid as well. Because Facebook paid marketing is so powerful because it's so targeted. But there's no point just throwing money at ads if you don't know who you're talking to for a start. And if you don't have a really good organic plan, because have you ever seen like a Facebook ad for a business or product or service, and then you click on that and you go to the profile and you check them out and they haven't posted for like 3 months or 4 months or whatever, and you think, these guys are actually still in business. So it's great to have paid reach. You've got to back it up with organic. And organic has to be, and it has to be relevant.
Yeah, interesting. Understood. Yeah. So you find your ideal marketplace, you find your ideal clients, you understand how the traffic works. Now, let's talk in terms of actually posting. So what me and my mate Jack, what we do in terms of our strategy is we post at least once each per day. So we like to go down the idea of making our own content. So one thing we had a discussion is a lot of podcasts, what they like to do is they like to share other people's posts and then they might see the same post twice. So what we did is we both use Photoshop as much as we can, and then we put the title of the last set and our little logo on it as well, edit it ourselves. And that's our ideal post. But recently we found it a little bit hard because in terms of gaining followers, because we post so much, and that kind of got me to the idea of thinking, is there a limit to how much you should be posting per day?
No, not really.
Not really?
The one thing, what you do need to consider though, is when I'm posting, what platforms am I posting on? Mm-hmm. And then what type of content am I posting on those platforms? And then you need to consider how large your following is, because all of those things are going to be things that all the platforms take into consideration. So if you're posting twice a day on Facebook, for example, and your following isn't very big and the things that you're posting are very similar, those two posts are actually going to be in competition with one another.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, but if you're posting, but for example, like if you do a post in the morning on Facebook, you do something in the afternoon on Instagram, and then you're doing stories throughout the day or at your peak time that you know that your audience are online for Instagram, for example, then you could be posting up to six or seven times a day, but spreading that over on different platforms, and that's still perfectly okay.
Very nice. So what would you say is the biggest lesson that you've learned whilst in this social media marketing?
For me, I reckon the biggest lesson would be, and it's probably not just related to social media, but business in general and maybe life as well, is learning how to say no to things.
Okay.
Because, in business, right, and we've touched on this before, I'm so big on planning, but it's so, have you heard of it's shiny object itis? That's a good idea, or maybe we should start doing that, or, we're not podcasting yet, let's do that. It's really good to say no to some things and just park things for a little bit, because otherwise you can't be good at everything. Like there's not enough hours in the day to nail everything in one quarter, for example. So I like to plan. I like to get really good at one thing, make sure the system's working well, and then implement another. So saying no in that regard, and also saying no to protect your time. Because, and it depends on what type of person you are, but I love working, absolutely. Absolutely love doing what I do. I'll be up at 11 o'clock at night sending Hannah messages, and she'll be like, can you please stop working, this is just so exciting. Yeah, go to sleep. You gotta say no to things to protect your time, and this is where the mental health part of it comes in for me as well. So what are your biggest lessons?
Probably the biggest one for me is kind of all the planning and reflection that we do within the business, every quarter and annually stuff. I think because that links back to our personal lives as well. So I think that, obviously, Emma said before, really big on planning. We do it a lot. And I think it's just a massive, massive lesson learned for me, because I'm someone that never used to plan anything.
Yeah.
Just went with the flow. And probably something else, I suppose, because we do work with a lot of clients and a lot of different businesses, it's just being really flexible and open-minded to what, I suppose, they want for their business, as well as our ideas. So, yeah.
Nice. Okay. So let's go into the depth of social media. Nowadays, I would say social media has never gotten so much more attention. We've got documentaries coming out about it, like The Social Dilemma. Did you ladies see that documentary?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on that? Because when I was watching it, I just remember they made it so dramatic. They had all these social media giants on there, and they were just they asked the question, what's wrong with social media? And then they were just and then they were kind of joking around it. But at the end of the day, they made them look like it was so negative, but I was you guys were just doing your jobs. So I don't see the problem. So let's give your thoughts on that. Yeah.
Very, very similar for me. So I mean, I guess these days we come to expect a bit of hype around certain things like that, and it is quite a controversial topic. I think for me, social media is, it's all how you use it. So, yeah, I felt like the documentary was good in that it explained a little bit about how it works, how it came to be, and possibly where they feel it's headed. But it was interesting because it was all hype, 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 and then at the end it was just like, well, really, there's nothing wrong with social media. It's just how people use it to influence. Correct. And really, it came back to leadership, didn't it?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It was amazing.
What about you, Hannah? What did you think about the documentary?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with exactly what Amber said, and that's my views as well, is it's how you use it. And I suppose it's just the education around it. I think people need to obviously open their eyes a little bit more and the people are so against it and say, well, you know, it's actually not that bad. It is how you use it and how your kids use it and how their kids are going to use it and everything like that. So it's all about, I suppose, perspective.
So that's that, because we're on that topic. What are some of the things you would like to change about social media, if you could?
I think the kids' education, definitely, or parents with kids that use social media, the education about it, just around, I suppose, the mental health side of it, as we do focus on that a lot. But I just think that, you know, if the parents are educating their children what it's about and how to use it, and that, you know, no, it's not real life, like, not everybody can have an influencer's life that goes on, you know, 10 holidays a year around the world and stuff. So if they actually, you know, educate their kids about it, I think that's probably the one thing that I would, yeah, change.
Yeah. I think for me it would be, I don't know that I'd change the platform. I don't think you can, you know, like, it is going to be what it's going to be. And I think it comes down to what your relationship with social media is and your reliance upon it, really. So for me, everything is good in moderation, and it really just depends on who you are as a person and, like I said, your relationship with certain things. So, yeah.
That's actually both valid points. I would actually agree with you both, especially on the subject of education, because for me growing up, when I didn't even have Facebook until right to the end of like high school, and I never had I had Instagram right to the end of high school as well, because I grew up always without it because my family were never involved. And the reason why they were never involved is because it was something new. And then when today the kids, I believe that parents need to have this conversation with kids about, you know, this is what you're getting yourself into because it's so big. And it's concerning for me because in social media, it is a place where a lot of negativity streams. A lot of people are like commenting horrific things. They're posting horrific things. We had that situation, I think it was on TikTok, where that poor man, like, you know, he was depressed and he committed a suicide video. And then some idiot thought it'd be a good idea to stream that in with a kid's video. So at the end of the day, I just want there to be a little bit more regulation, because what is it? We have, because now I don't have regulation in terms of what you can put out there, better guidelines. Maybe people can monitor a lot more, even though it's impossible to monitor everything, but just some kind of like moderation and regulation. So
I think that's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. So earlier on, I talked about negativity, and not just on social media. I just want to ask, like, how do you girls like deal with that kind of negativity on social media, but also in real life?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a couple of different aspects to it. So for us, obviously, we have a pretty good awareness around the channels that we spend a lot of time on. We moderate the time that we spend on social personally, not just in business, probably more so personally than we can in business, because it's the platforms that we work on. But we, you know, we know how to ensure that what we're seeing in our feeds is what we want to be seeing, and we know how to change that and block that and report that and all that sort of stuff. It's about the amount of time that you're spending on it. It's about your perspective around it. From a business perspective, when we experience any sort of negativity on social media, whether it's directed at our businesses or whether the clients' businesses that we manage, we handle that with honesty and integrity, really, because it's the only way that you can do it. So if it's genuine negative feedback, then it needs to be, I think it's a good idea to address it in a public forum, because from a business perspective, businesses do receive negative feedback, and as good as you try to be, sometimes things go wrong, sometimes things don't go as planned. But what's really important for your audience to see is that you can receive negative feedback and how you respond to that. So it can actually be a gift. Last year, when we started playing with TikTok for social friends, Hannah did this, which we thought was hilarious, TikTok of a Carl Barron TikTok. And we shared it on Facebook, and some of the feedback, or one lady commented and said, well, if that's TikTok, I don't want any part of it. And we said, well, that's okay, you know, that it's your choice, you know. So we use this as a chance to then educate our audience. And, you know, this, you don't have to be on that platform. You can restrict what you see on that platform. And then she came back and said, you know, well, I just think it's disgusting because my kids have access to this and la la. And then that was fantastic because then that was another opportunity yeah. for us to then educate people about how to protect their children from these sort of things. So how else, like, for you, what?
Yeah, I suppose the other option, if it is like harassment or just like really degrading comments, if it's just, you know, someone being an absolute asshole, basically, there's nothing wrong with hiding their comment and then blocking them or deleting them completely off your business page and any like in your personal pages as well. Just delete the comment, hide the comment, block them, then they're done. You can forget about it. Yeah. Don't feed bullies, just hide them.
Yeah, I deal with it in two ways. Well, one, how I perceive it is because me and my friend, we've only been doing this for quite some time now. We've been doing it for a little bit of time. It's starting to build up. And I said, with it, mate, we're going to get a lot of hate. We're going to get a lot of negative feedback. But I said to him, unless it's, constructive. Unless it's constructive, I tell him not to respond to it because, first of all, I feel like people get too comfortable in those comment sections. I'm like, if people spoke to each other like that in real life, oh my God, the world would be a very different place. So So I say to him, look, here's one of two ways. You either say, thank you, have a nice day, subscribe to the podcast, or nothing. And then, because the last thing I want is you wasting your time getting into some argument with someone who you've never met before. And then, well, you can be doing other things. So
you've got to be careful that you're not actually perpetuating the negativity. There's nothing wrong with standing up for yourself and your business and your values either if you feel like the situation calls for it. But a lot of times, like, you just can't argue with stupid. So you just let it go.
Let it go. Like, I mean, we had this one comment about this this guy, and he's just like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. You two should da 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 da. And then my mate Jack he said, oh, and then I remember saying, I can't believe these guys actually said that. And then we just had a 5-second talk about it. And then we just move on. How I actually believe it is, you can have 10 minutes of complaining, but then you got to move on because otherwise if you let it eat it up, that's how the way these people win, you know. So nowadays there's a lot of debate about, you know, how much we should be engaging. You know, you see all the time in the news about parents and they should be like limiting the amount of time that children should be spending on Facebook. And that's got me thinking in terms of a business, and you use it so often as well as in your personal lives, what do you believe is like a healthy amount of time you can spend, let's say, each day on social media?
Yeah, again, my personal opinion is that it depends on that person's relationship with social media and whether they are running a business through it. And for me, it's all about balance. So if you're using social media from a business perspective, there's so many great tools out there that you can use to schedule posts so that you're not spending every waking hour on social media. So you can plan your content, you can create your content, and you can schedule it in advance and almost set and forget. And then you just do a little bit of community management and moderate comments and things like that. So you can actually bring that down to quite a small amount of time each day or each week. In terms of personal, look, it depends on the person. If you're somebody who, you know, you get off Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter feeling really low and really flat, quite lonely, depressed, tired, then you know that you need to be spending less time on those platforms. But if you're someone who's quite happy to go on and see what your friend's been up to, laugh at a couple of TikToks, have a bit of fun, use it for that style, then that's great as well. But just remember, and again, this loops back into mental health and where we're so big on this, remember that you've still got to spend time engaging face-to-face. You know, you've still got to have those interactions. You've still got to go out in the sunshine. You've got to get your feet on the sand and the grass and breathe fresh air and, you know, put your phone down when you're having dinner with people and all those sort of things, because otherwise it will affect your health and your mental health as well.
So let's just get on that topic since we're talking about mental health. Like, Why is one thing going to look, to go a little bit off script? Why is it you believe that social media has such a, would you say, such a big role in people's mental health nowadays? Like, why do you believe that, you know, so they say the states that social media is linked to like depression or anxiety? Why do you believe that is the case?
I think it's unrealistic expectations. So again, it's there's a lack of education around it. So, you know, teenage boys and girls are growing up and they're like, wow, they've got this, this and this, and why can't I have that? Like, why can't my body look like that? Whereas they see that, you know, fitness model that's been working for 3 years, training five times a week, and then they're like, well, why can't I have that? Because they don't see that hard work. They just see that, wow, this is like the best thing ever. And they, yeah, just comparing themselves, I suppose. And it's just, again, that lack of education around that.
Yeah, which I think leads to comparison. I think if you're going to give it a broad name, I would probably say comparison. And, you know, comparison is a thief of joy. And we need to be making sure that we're doing things that fill our cup instead of take away from that. So, again, it's all how you use it, hey.
So in its aspect of comparison, that's a very, I actually like that a lot, but comparison is a thief of joy. I've never heard that one before. Let's talk about comparison, right? Let's say who's got, in terms of fault and responsibility, who's more responsible for when we say, if this person's posting, oh, he's like 19 years old, he's got all this money, he's flaunting it, he's doing all this, is it maybe, would you say it's him as our responsibility to uphold, maybe to post, maybe something more appropriate? Or they say it's a 19-year-old and he's seeing this and he's going, ooh, oh my God, why should we be doing this? Who do you think has more responsibility in a sort of situation?
Well, I think it's the individual. Have you, you're a fan of Jocko Willink, right?
Yes, big time, yeah.
Yeah, so have you read Extreme Ownership?
Yeah, definitely. I've read all his books. I think I just got the new, his most recent one, which was Leadership Strategies and Tactics, which I've still got to get onto. Yeah.
So extreme ownership, right? So you can't rely on external sources for your own happiness, for your own well-being and those sort of things. So I think if you want to look at it broadly, if you're a person of influence, then you certainly have, I would say you certainly have morally an obligation to be aware at least of what you're putting out there. But it's really on the individual. If you know that person is not a healthy person for you to be watching, following and modelling, you know, as a role model for you, then unfollow. It's all you got to do. If they're not filling your cup, you got to unfollow. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's you, but there is nothing wrong with a little bit of social responsibility as well. And that's part of what we teach and train as well when we're talking to people about how to use social media. You know, does this align with your values and how is this going to affect your audience?
Awesome. And do you have anything to add to that, Hannah?
No, I just think, I suppose on the personal side of it, you know, like the 19-year-old guy with the car and the money and stuff, like he shouldn't have to hide his life, and it's probably not doing it in a way to show off. That's just him, that's all he knows. So again, like Amber said, yeah, it probably goes back to the individual, and so I suppose mindset around that. And
good. Now linking back earlier on in this conversation, we talked about videos and why is it that people prefer videos over text. So if you were to give a format to someone, what would you say is the best guidelines for a successful video?
Yeah, there's a really clear framework for video, which is great because it makes it easy for everybody. So first, it starts with, again, it's all about planning, right? So you want to look at why. So why are you actually shooting a video? What's the objective of the video? And then what is the style? So are you doing a tutorial? Is it an explainer video? Or is it maybe a customer review? So what is the style of that video going to be? How does it add value to your audience or your business and or your business? Where is it going? Which platform are you putting it on? Because when you're creating video, there's different size videos for different platforms. So IGTV is different to maybe a Facebook video, to an Instagram story. You know, so you've got to work out where it's actually going to go. And then are you doing it yourself or are you going to get a professional to do it? So if you're getting a professional to do it, you want to have a really clear outline of what you want it to look like. So you can say to them, this is what the the end product needs to be. And if you're doing it yourself, you need to look at, okay, what kind of equipment do I need and those sort of things as well. And remember, with video, you've got to get your audience's attention within the first 2 to 3 seconds, because okay. We are just like, swipe. We're happy just to keep swiping. And captions are really good as well.
Okay. Interesting. So let's talk about captions. Now, recently I read a book. I can't remember who wrote it, but I see the Facebook ad for it all the time. It's called Sell Like Crazy. Have you heard of that book? Have you read it?
I haven't read it yet. No.
I definitely recommend it. There was a couple of There's a couple of plans and tips that was prescribed, and I just want to ask in your experience, this is why for you. In terms of captions, one thing I've learned that is, I believe, effective on the book is making sure they say the first word or the first sentence, make it bold, make it clear, okay? Mm. And then the second thing I learned was people love numbers. So if I were to make a video, they say three tips to, I don't know, include your shoulder strength, or so improve shoulder strength, or three tips to bring up your bench. Is this something that you would recommend to your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. The headline has to be attention grabbing. Numbers work really well. And you want to be careful. It's a bit borderline. You want to put something that is attention grabbing, but don't make it clickbait.
Okay.
And there's a number of reasons that you don't do that, is because one, we can smell bullshit a mile away. We've seen it so much now. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that if I don't know that that's bullshit and I click on it, and then you could say something like, what's a headline that we use? 9 out of 10 people die from eating cheesecake, right? That's a clickbait headline. But I'd be like, oh my god, I eat cheesecake. Click on it. And then if the article or the video has nothing to do with that, then I've just lost all respect for your brand. So you're going to lose people quicker than you're going to get people. And the other thing is that from a social media algorithm point of view, you're actually going to lose points because Facebook or Instagram, whatever, is going to realize that it's just a headline. It doesn't relate to your article or your video at all. And it's going to show it to less people.
So another question I just wanted to add into that. Why is it that people are so attracted to numbers? That's one thing that's concerning. Like, why is it about numbers that some people click on?
I don't know. It's funny, isn't it? It'd be to do with our psychology, I would imagine.
Psychology.
I don't know. I'll read that book and I'll find out.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's just said, there was like a small section say, people love numbers, and they did a study. He said ways to do this, but if he actually had a number behind it, certain amount of ways to do this, then people were more likely to click, and then that was it. And I was like, okay, all right. So just include numbers, that's one thing. Now, in terms of posting, we've talked about, there shouldn't be a limit. You should constantly keep getting into the algorithm. You should keep engaging with our audience. Now, there's sort of two questions right off the bat of having this one. Is the first one would be, what is the best way to engage with your audience? And secondly, when is really the best time to post?
All right, well, I'll answer the first. You can answer the second if you like. So best way to engage is how your audience likes to be engaged. Mm-hmm. So you'll learn that through doing your work on your ideal client avatar. So you'll know whether they prefer video, if they prefer video with caption, if they prefer text, images, graphics, those sort of things. And you will know from the results that you're getting. So we're always saying test and measure, right? So if you're not sure something's going to work, the only way to find out is if you actually post it and record the result and then review the result. So when we do our monthly planning, for example, we'll plan the next month in advance, but we also review what happened last month so we can see what's working well, what we should be doing wrong, maybe what we need to tweak, and those sort of things. So get an idea through understanding your clients and then practicing. That's And then in terms of times and days?
It really does depend on your audience, because if you're, if you think my audience is mums, they're probably going to be on their phone, say, at like 3 p.m. while they're waiting for school, like that. Whereas if your target audience is someone that works an office job, then they're going to be probably on the phone at like 5 after work when they're finished either coming home or they've just got home to relax on the couch. So there is a site, Sprout Social, that does say at the moment they reckon that on Facebook, Wednesdays, 11 a.m. and like about 1 to 2 p.m. is doing really well at the moment. And the same is on Instagram, Wednesdays, 11 a.m. But there's also Friday on 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. So again, that is kind of just like an overview.
Yeah.
But if your ideal client is not on those platforms at that time because they're at work, don't post them.
Yeah.
So it's all just, again, test and measure, see what's working, what time they're on, and, obviously go up there.
Okay. So now moving on to the topic of mental health, because I wanted to spend the next part obviously asking about that, and then later on down the line I want to talk about this boot camp that you ladies have coming up. So you're constantly engaging with people on the online 24/7, you know, you engage with negativity, and that can have a bit of an effect on it. And obviously I'm a firm believer of your output is a result of your input. So that's on when it comes to dealing again with negativity. What are some activities or let's say hobbies that you prescribe to someone to maintain like a healthy mindset whilst dealing with social media?
Yeah, I think probably the first thing we would tell people is like step away from it. Like Emma said before, if you've got that unhealthy relationship from it, turn it off, have a week break, or at a certain time of day you put your phone down for an hour or so. But the biggest one for me is probably like your physical activity and drinking water. So as an ex-PT myself, I know how bloody important it is to move your body, but also that if you don't move your body, I've felt the like effects as well on your mental like health, your mood and all of that stuff. And then I reckon aim at least to drink 3 liters of water a day. So a lot of people don't do that, and it makes you tired, it makes you fatigued, obviously then affects your mood again and can lead to more mental health problems as well as obviously your physical problems as well. But yeah, physical activity and water.
Yeah, and just to add to that as well, you know, exactly what Hannah was saying, like have those breaks, go outside, even if you're at work during the day, get outside in the sunshine, getting to nature, eat really well. There's one thing, have you heard of Hal Elrod and The Miracle Morning, the book called The Miracle Morning?
No, I haven't. Can you give me a little bit more information on it?
Yeah, so basically His story is that he was in a very severe accident, ended up in a very low place in life, started doing a lot of reading and found that high performers, whether it's in business or whatever it is, they seem to have the same theme of how they start their day. So you've probably heard like win the morning, win the day type analogy. And I guess the miracle morning is kind of based around that. So what he did is he collected all of the data of what he saw high performers doing, and he thought, well, instead of just doing one of those things every day, what if I did all six of them? Because he found six traits, right? And what they are is they're called SAVERS. So SAVERS is an acronym. So the first thing is silence. So as soon as you wake up in the morning, silence. So that could be meditation or just sitting there and doing a little bit of breath work. A is for affirmations, so, you know, like all your I am statements, so things that are going to fill you up, things that are going to make you feel good and confident and know what direction you're heading, whether it's work, business, personal, whatever. Visualization, so after those affirmations, you sit and visualize what you want your day to look like or what you want a certain outcome to look like, so you're kind of getting ahead of it. Exercise is what the E stands for. So again, just what you were saying, get that body moving. Even if it's like you know, you just go for a 10-minute walk in the morning, or you know, even if you just do some gentle stretching or whatever it is. And then read, that's the R. So reading anything that just makes you feel good. So if you're someone who likes personal development or business, or maybe you just want to read something that's you know, just a nonfiction or whatever, just read 10 minutes a day. And then the last S stands for scribe. So journaling, or, you know, like writing your to-do list or goal setting or something like that. So those are the six things. Those are the savers that he recommends doing for high performance and getting yourself in a really good headspace. So that's something that I implemented September last year. And it just has a profound impact on your entire day. And the outcome that you get with life. And a lot of people, the first thing people say is, I don't have time to do all of that shit. You just wake up half an hour early and it all fits in there. Yeah. So.
Well, me personally, I believe that what is the, so did you say the 30-minute time frame is most ideal?
Yeah, you can do it. It's whatever you can do. As long as you're doing, I find 30 minutes is the shortest amount of time to, if you wanted to do this full six savers, that would be, you at least want to give it half an hour.
Okay. So if you don't mind, would you mind giving you your little outline, both of you, of what you would do as a morning routine?
Yeah, I can do that. So for me,
don't ask me.
I'm still working on implementing. So for me, my savers start with silence. So I'll wake up in the morning and I do some breath work straight away or some meditation straight away. So normally I'll do some box breathing or something like that, you know, the in for four, hold for four, out for four, that sort of thing. And then I go straight into affirmations. And the way I do my affirmations is I actually have mine pre-recorded into a voice recording on my phone. So then all I have to do in the morning is I just hit play and listen to myself saying them out loud. So you just sort of say them to yourself in your mind as you're going. And mine just cover like all the different areas. So it'll cover health, you know, like business, you know, spirituality, all those sort of things, whatever goals that I'm going for. Hey, be careful with affirmations, because in 2019, I started doing affirmations very religiously. And one of the things that I said was, I'm grateful that we have upgraded our car. So the car we had at the time, we'd had for 11 years, and we were thinking in 2020, we'll do an upgrade. So started doing these affirmations. We went to Hawaii for a business thing, came back, and the car was dead. Like, we just couldn't get it to go. So a week later, we had a brand new car. So be careful what you put in your affirmations. Affirmations. So I'll do my affirmations straight away. And then straight after that, while I'm still in bed, I'll do my visualizations. And then I'll get up and stretch. So I'll either do, I don't like to do, get up and get straight into like really heavy physical exercise in the morning. I prefer a gentle stretch or a walk on the treadmill. Like a walk / jog on the treadmill. And while I'm on the treadie, I listen to an audiobook. So that's how I fit my reading into that. And then, yeah, once I've done that, then I describe what I did for the morning, and that's it.
Awesome. And Hannah?
My morning routine is shocking. It depends on the day. I have actually set my new one, but I'm starting on Monday, as everyone says. But yeah, mine also includes a lot of like, I've added some skincare and stuff into mine, just because I'm now, you know, getting old, so outside of it's just some anti-aging. Okay. But yeah, and then obviously, yeah, just getting up. I don't meditate yet, but I know that I have to. Affirmations is something that I am working on, and the visualization, and then obviously just getting up, going to the gym, making sure I come home, drink a lot of water, eat, and then kind of head to work and stuff. I actually like to read at nighttime. So that's something that I do at nighttime in my kind of like nighttime routine that I've kind of nailed. But yeah, morning routines coming. Yeah.
For me,
you go.
Sorry, you were saying?
I was just going to say, I'm enjoying not having the 5 a.m. wake ups to be a PT anymore this last couple of years. So I've got back into the habit of sleeping in. So.
Good. It's for me, I personally, I agree. When it comes to morning routines, it's different, because like some mornings I'll have to get up and open the gym at 5 and be there ready to go for a client. But some mornings I feel better when I have that light sleep in. For me, I care more about a nightly routine. Now, the reason being is because on the subject of sleep, I believe there are the cases, you can argue the case that your day doesn't sometimes really begin in the morning. It can begin in the morning, but for me, it begins the night before. Because one of the biggest excuses, if someone's having a bad day, to say, sorry, mate, I didn't get enough sleep last night. And then that's why I take it a little bit more seriously. So for a nightly routine, what I would have to outline is make sure I put the phone down at least an hour before, preferably like 8 p.m. so I can try and get into bed at least by 9. I like to at least read a good 30 minutes in bed, because I always find myself when you're like laying in bed and you're reading, your body is naturally slowly starting to shut down, and then that way you can ease into it. Maybe there's the case of supplementation. So that's been my most important thing. But in terms of morning routine, one thing that's like stay consistent is when I get up, obviously I have to get to the gym straight away. So I only have time for, I really only make time for a few things I know I can be consistent on. It's so simple. The first one is make your bed. It takes 10 seconds, 10 seconds. I mean, I started doing it when I heard I can't remember whose name specifically, but it was that Navy SEAL commander or admiral, and he did that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah, that speech where he said, like, just make your bed first thing in the morning. So I started doing that.
Yeah.
And then the second thing I do is I have a book called The Daily Stoic, and it was written by Ryan Holiday. And it's a book you read where it's literally a page per day. So people say you don't have to actually, you know, read 10 pages, it's ridiculous. It's literally a page. And some of those days are literally just one paragraph and one quote. And then so two things you've already achieved, you've read one page of a book, and you've already made your bed. Yeah.
Yep.
So I wanted to spend the last 5-10 minutes of this podcast like talking about this boot camp that you got going up. So for someone who doesn't know anything at all about it, or just tell us, like, you know, what is it? What can we do and benefit from, and where can my viewers sign up for it?
Yeah, awesome. So we're so excited about this. This is something new that we've been working on for a while. So, you know, we've got the management that we do. We do one-on-one training. We come into businesses and do training with them one-on-one like that. But we wanted to, the whole purpose of Social Friends is to support all levels of business. So we wanted to create something that was easy for people to use, affordable for people to use and implement in their business. So it's called 5 Steps to Simplified Socials. So really excited. We've got the number in the title for you there.
Well done.
So basically it's a program that's going to help you build and grow your business through Facebook and Instagram without being overwhelmed, because that's what we hear all the time, right? We hear things like, I'm just so overwhelmed. I'm not a marketer. I don't know where to start. I feel like I'm doing more harm than good. I don't have a clear strategy. All of those sort of things. We hear all that all the time. So the course is designed to take all of that out of it for you, so that you can have those clear objectives. You've got a clear vision and framework for your foundations. You know who your ideal clients are. You know, we've been talking about that today. How you can convert online conversations into sales, because conversations are the new leads. Expanding your online exposure, all of those kind of things. So just so that you know exactly what to do, how to do it without feeling overwhelmed. The dates that they're going to be announced soon. So what we're doing is we're running it. It's a 6-week program. It's going to be all run online, and we're going to be running only 3 of them a year. So the dates are going to be announced. We've had the website. The website is going live next week, end of March. So all the details are going to be on there, and that's when we'll announce the dates for the course as well. So if anybody wants more information or they want to jump on board, Facebook, Instagram, flick us a message, and we can get some info out to you. We also have the Social Friends Hangout, which is a private group that we have. Anybody can join, and we just put tons of free social media tips and things in there. So if anybody wants to check that out, we'll also be putting the dates for when the boot camp starts in there. And for your listeners, if any of your listeners want to do the 5 Steps to Simplified Social with us, they'll mention this podcast, and they'll actually get a free Facebook business page audit from us as well. So. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll make sure I mention that. Now, let's say, we'll just move on. What is the best way my viewers can get in contact with you? Is it just through social media, or do you girls have like a business email?
Yep, we do. So Facebook or Instagram is the best. We also have, you can just email me at amber@socialfriends.net.au. Yeah, that's just the simplest way.
Yeah.
So it's the same. Is it okay? We can just make sure we get that email just so I can put it in the link title. In the description. And before we wrap this up, is there anything, any shout outs you want to give or any people you want to thank?
Well, you.
Yeah.
Really. We want to thank you for inviting us to onto your podcast. It's actually the first podcast that we've done, which is really cool. So thank you for the opportunity and the experience leading in and learning new things all the time. So, it's awesome.
All right. Well, thank you very much, ladies. That's all the time we got for today. I just want to say a big thank you for the podcast on behalf of taking time out. And also very far down the future, me and Jack, we're getting there. We're getting close to our own studio. So when that happens, we will get you ladies back in. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Fabulous. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Lovely. Okay.